Time for Wrigley's Spearmint.
The March of Time.
The makers of Wrigley's Spearmint Gum bring you the March of Time just as they present their own products for your enjoyment. This is an exciting year. What events it will bring forth, no man can tell. But come what may, you can depend upon the editors of Time to bring you their swift reenactment of these memorable events. So, too, you can always depend upon Wrigley's for quality and satisfaction.
Tonight, the editors of Time, the weekly news magazine, raise the curtain on their reenactment of the scenes which today have added one more dramatic page to history, to the March of Time.
Monday, May 11th, 1936. Today is reported an interview from Lakehurst, New Jersey, where the giant German Zeppelin Hindenburg is being made ready for her return voyage tonight to Friedrichshafen. In a little room off the Pine Tree Inn bar, New York Times news hawk Milton Bracker locates its enterprising young proprietor, who is also barbershop owner, real estate and insurance broker, and mayor of Lakehurst. 32-year-old Harold J. Puccilli, in his shirt sleeves, painting a sign.
Well, Mayor Puccilli, I guess with all the people coming out here to see the Zeppelin Hindenburg, you citizens of Lakehurst are going to make a pretty good thing out of it.
Well, you can get a rough idea from this sign.
Soda, 5 cents.
Yeah, 5 cents. Boy, even a little bottle of pop ought to sell for a dime on a day like this. The whole town's overstocked. We've put out thousands of dollars in sandwiches, souvenirs, and we won't be able to sell half of it.
Oh, seems to be quite a crowd out here today.
Why, this isn't any more of a crowd than we have every Sunday. When we laid in our supplies for this weekend, we were thinking of the kind of crowd we had out here when the Graf Zeppelin landed in 1928. We were sold out before it even got here.
Well, why do you think they didn't come out here today?
Well, I'm mayor of this town, and I don't want to get mixed up in any kind of international politics, but have you seen those four big black and white trademarks on the rudders of this new Zeppelin?
Why, you mean the Nazi swastikas?
Mm-hmm.
Well, do you think that's what kept people away?
Mm-hmm. And not Adolf Hitler.
Today in France, following a fortnight of feverish political activity, initial excitement over the Popular Front victory and new communist and socialist majority in the Chamber of Deputies subsides. France's communist leader, Maurice Thorez, is interviewed by New York Herald Tribune correspondent John Elliott.
Do you expect to take part in the government, Mr. Thorez?
The Socialist Party is going to take charge of the French government. We communists will simply give our loyal support.
Then you communists will want to introduce legislation, won't you?
The first bill I intend to introduce is for heavy taxes on all big fortunes to balance the budget. And we plan to eliminate unemployment by placing the needy on public works projects.
Oh, a sort of New Deal, you mean?
Precisely. We are not abandoning our own communist program, which calls for revolution, for a new society. But until then, we will pursue our old tactics of boring from within, of paving the way for communism in France.
Soothed but not placated are French capitalists at young communist Torres' mild intentions. Await definite commitment by the man who must take office as premier on June 1st, old Jewish millionaire socialist Léon Blum, longtime colorful figure of French politics who gravely rises to address the executive council of his socialist party in the speech which all France is eagerly awaiting.
I am prepared to undertake the premiership of France in the name of the People's Front of Communism and Socialism on the 1st of June. We have one objective, to maintain democratic order and ward off fascism during this world crisis. We will institute tax reforms, government relief of human misery, and public works projects to create employment. All these things have been accomplished elsewhere, and they need not terrify the French people.
Thus, France's next premier accepts his appointment by the new communist and socialist majority, pledging his intention to pilot his red government no farther left than Franklin Delano Roosevelt's New Deal. Today is published the most comprehensive treatise on Americanisms to date, the book whose previous editions were read in England, translated into German. H.L. Mencken's 769-page The American Language. In a vein of brilliant palaver, says author Mencken on Briticism in the United States,
to the average red-blooded he-American, the Englishman's broad A and his occasional use of such un-American locutions as jolly, awfully, and ripping is evidence of racial decay. As for Blighty, Cheerio, and Righto, they strike most members of the American Legion as almost as unmanly as Tummy.
Says Mencken of the American Language Today,
the favorite American pastime, the formation of artificial words of the scalawag, lollapalooza, and rambunctious class goes on constantly. We now have Whang Doodle, Peacherino, Super Gum Slumptious, Scrumptious, Slumgullion, and Spondulix. Such a term as rubberneck is almost a complete treatise on American psychology.
On the future of the American language, says Mr. Mencken,
the influence of 125 million people, practically all headed in one direction, is too great to be resisted by the minority in England, wherever the King's English comes into competition with the President's American. American tends to prevail. The international language of the future may look like English, but it will sound like American.
Today in Washington comes an ending to a solemn little scene enacted in the office of Works Progress Administrator Harry L. Hopkins. As Mr. Hopkins' assistant, Aubrey Williams, sits at his desk, a strange delegation of 35 men and women, hips shrunken, shoulders twisted, backs hunched, hobble into the office.
What can I do for you?
We've come to see Administrator Hopkins.
Well, Mr. Hopkins isn't in. Who are you?
We represent 5,000 men and women like us in New York City. Get Mr. Hopkins. We've got to talk to him.
I'm sorry, but Mr. Hopkins won't be in today.
We'll stay right here until he does come.
Isn't there anything I can do?
Well, we'll tell you. But we're going to tell Mr. Hopkins, too. People always either feel sorry for us or shrink back when they see us. And that's what the government's been doing.
They put us on the dole. But what we want is just a chance to work. Congress appropriated $4 billion for a work fund. Well, why can't we go to work?
Yes, but Congress said that the money should be used to put employables to work.
Congress seems to have the same prejudice as everybody has against us. What's the matter with us? One girl here is a teacher. One boy is a physicist. We're all trained to work. Yet we can't get it.
That's right. Well, you should see your local WPA director in New York.
We did. He said he'd give us jobs that Washington wouldn't approve. And he had the police throw us out.
So we've come down to ask Mr. Hopkins why. And whether he said he wouldn't approve of us working for the government. Just because we don't walk straight.
Excuse me, please. Hello? Oh, yes, Mr. Hopkins. Well, there's a delegation here from the physically handicapped people of New York.
Tell him we won't leave here till we see him personally.
They insist upon seeing you. All right. Yes, right.
Well?
Mr. Hopkins says he'll see five of you on Monday.
Well, we got no place to go, so we'll stay right here and wait.
After 30 hours sprawled grotesquely on conference tables and desks, the band of 35 men and women is furnished hotel accommodations by Assistant Works Progress Administrator Aubrey Williams until this morning, when Administrator Hopkins, after a one-hour interview, denies their request for work instead of dole. Immediately, they request audience with President Roosevelt, who tonight declines to see them, promises further investigation. Today from Jerusalem, from the ornate royal suite of the King David Hotel, exiled Haile Selassie, since Saturday one of two rival emperors of Ethiopia, breaks a 10-day silence. Flanked by two doctors, his American advisor Everett Colson, and with his small dog, a spaniel-like papillon, at his feet, the weary-eyed emperor plays tea host to foreign news hawks.
Why, your hands are burned raw, Your Majesty.
Yes, the poison gas, but it is nothing. I was fortunate to escape with my life.
Why did you finally decide to flee, Your Majesty?
To save my people from extermination by Italian poison gas. I would have remained if I had been convinced it was in the best interests of my people. But my death or my imprisonment would have been futile. Abroad, I can freely pursue efforts to save Ethiopia's independence.
There, Lulu.
Your Majesty, you are tired. Please withdraw the rest. Gentlemen, you will excuse His Majesty, I'm sure.
Good afternoon, gentlemen. My advisor, Mr. Coulson, will answer any other questions. Come, Lulu.
Goodbye, Your Majesty. So long, Pups.
My constant companion, this dog, gentlemen. Lulu was given to me a few years ago by King Victor Emmanuel of Italy.
Mr. Coulson, do you agree that his flight was the wisest course?
Yes, indeed. To leave Ethiopia, but keep his claim to the throne. He can prevent recognition of Italy's conquest, perhaps. Some country with interest in Ethiopia has a nuisance value.
I understand, Mr. Coulson. He's checked over with the British bank manager his inventory of the 117 boxes he brought with him, and that his treasure amounts to $5 million.
As good an estimate as any, I suppose. Incidentally, he had another offer today by cable from Fort Worth, Texas. $150,000 for him to appear at the Texas Centennial for 4 weeks. That he didn't accept.
Well, Haile Selassie would certainly have been a great attraction in Texas.
Mr. Coulson, I see the Emperor has a radio here. Did he listen to Mussolini proclaim Vittorio Emmanuel Emperor of Ethiopia Saturday?
Yes, but he turned off the set himself in the middle of Il Duce's speech.
And in Geneva, Switzerland, today, with Il Duce's new Roman Empire, the worst humiliation to the League of Nations Council in all its 92 sessions, at the council table sits Italy's Baron Pompeo Aloisi. In a chair reserved for non-members of the council, Ethiopia's bearded, bespectacled Walt Mariam. Britain's Anthony Eden raps for order.
The 92nd session of the League Council is now in session. I invite the Ethiopian delegate to take a place at the council table.
Mr. Chairman.
The Italian delegate, Baron Aloisi.
The Italian delegation cannot admit the presence at the council table of the so-called Ethiopian delegation.
Mr. Chairman.
The Ethiopian delegate, Mr. Wold Mariam.
Ethiopia is still a member of the League of Nations. Ethiopia is not an aggressor, but a victim of aggression by a member of the League. I believe it is not Ethiopia who should withdraw from the council.
Very well, gentlemen. I find myself obliged to withdraw the entire Italian delegation. No semblance of Ethiopian state exists. The only sovereign Ethiopian government is that of Italy. All discussion of Italo-Ethiopian difference is without meaning, for it is now a domestic problem for Italy. Gentlemen, I bid you good day.
Thus, Baron Aloisi takes a walk today from the League Council, as Ethiopia wins her right to sit at the table, still recognized a sovereign League member. A hollow triumph, however, when the League postpones for 5 weeks all discussion of the Italo-Ethiopian dilemma. A draw for the disputants, an expected dodge for the League. And with the problem of the old Abyssinian Empire and the new Roman Empire still a muddle, in Jerusalem tonight, Dog Lulu's master suffers a nervous collapse. Time marches on.
You are listening to The March of Time, the reenactment of memorable scenes from the news of the world, prepared and presented by the editors of Time.
Time marches on, often at a dangerous pace. When you drive your car, does the speedometer gradually creep up over the speed limit? Do you find yourself driving faster than you meant to? Well, the next time you take out your car, buy a package of Wrigley's Spearmint Gum. Relax behind the wheel and let the traffic cop chase somebody else. You'll enjoy driving more than ever. Really do this and convince yourself.
Again tomorrow night at the same hour, and every night, Monday through Friday, the March of Time.
Time marches on. This is the Columbia Broadcasting System. WABC, New York.